I'm Doug McCauley, California's Real Estate Commissioner. Thank you for listening to First Home California.
From the California Department of Real Estate, this is First Home California, helping Californians buy their first home. We're so glad you found us. I am Rick Lopes. The Department of Real Estate created this podcast to provide you with the knowledge and insights to help you get to a place where you know what to expect during the home buying process and how to help make sure you're ready to make informed decisions about what will likely be the biggest purchase of your life. Each episode focuses on a specific part of the home buying process, so be sure to hit follow on your podcast app so you'll never miss an episode. There are a lot of professionals who are going to be involved in your home purchase, but none is going to be more important to you than your real estate agent. So today we've got tips on how to find the right real estate agent. But before we start, we need to go over a couple of terms so you're familiar with them. They are real estate agent and realtor. You probably used or heard at least one or the other and without even thinking about them. But we wanted to share what the actual term is that you should be using. It's called a real estate agent. Now, the term realtor could be used in some cases, but it's actually a trademarked term, and it's only supposed to refer to people who are real estate agents who are members of the National Association of Realtors, which is the industry's largest trade group. So, always okay to use real estate agent. People will understand what you mean if you use the term realtor. It's like using Kleenex. It's a trade name. Should be a tissue, but you can use it and people use it. So we just wanted to let you know that technically you should be calling them real estate agents unless you know for sure that they are a member of the National Association of Realtors. Okay, with that out of the way, let's introduce you to our two guests. Mike Shankman is a licensed real estate agent. I think he actually is a realtor too, who's been in the industry for more than two decades. He's also a lecturer in the Department of Urban Studies and Planning at UC San Diego. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Rick. Thanks for having me come back on here.
It's great to have you back with us. And we also are joined today by Chica Sundquist. Chica is the Assistant Commissioner of Enforcement, overseeing our enforcement division within the Department of Real Estate. And we should also note that Chica is a licensed real estate agent, although her license is on what's called government service status while she works for us. Hi, Chica.
Hi, Rick.
It's great to have both of you. Mike, let's go ahead and get started with you. During the home buying process, what are the typical responsibilities that are going to be handled by a buyer's real estate agent?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I'm actually going to back up in answering it because I think it'll help answer that as well. There's a very key component to being called a realtor, and that is that you ascribe to follow the code of ethics, which is from the National Association of Realtors. Because yeah, come on, when you back up, why do realtors become realtors, right? And I always like to explain, I know I probably shouldn't talk religion, but it's like the whole thing, all Catholics are Christian, but not all Christians are Catholics. Same thing, all realtors are real estate agents, but not all real estate agents are realtors. And the big distinction was when the National Association of Realtors started, they had said, we want to create something where we have kind of everything almost unionized or some collective that says we're going to follow these guidelines. And those guidelines say we act essentially in good faith. So when you start to wonder, what is it that your buyer's agent does? Well, they act in good faith for you. You know, what is the, I want Chica to jump in on this too, because when you look at like, this obviously comes up a lot in how you look at, you know, rules, regulations, at least in my opinion, it's, you know, what does your buyer agent do? Well, your agent doesn't, more or less, what does your agent not do? Okay. Does your agent make decisions for you? No. Does your agent advise you? Does your agent look at the situation, your project, your contract, your, you know, the property you're listing, the property you're looking to buy? Do they pick the house for you? No, of course they don't. Why? Because they're not going to live there. But they are in a situation of doing this professionally where they understand what your needs are and help guide you in that process. So if there's anything that helps you find that property, establish that fair and just contract that meets the needs that you want, that's really where the realtor falls into, or even the real estate agent, the person who's helping you as a buyer's agent. Someone who is, if I hear information, I'm repeating that information. If there's something that I've seen, I'm going to bring that up to you as my client, because I understand the process. And I think it's very hard to put that into type of like a box of this is what the agent responsibilities are, other than to say we act in good faith and make sure you're acting in good faith as you're moving forward in the transaction.
It is a good way that you say that. All real estate agents aren't realtors, but all realtors are real estate agents. So it's a subgroup. Now there's an extra level as you, I'm trying to think of putting myself in the mind of a first-time home buyer when you're looking to find an agent to hire. Now, it may be something that you want to have somebody who is a member of the National Association of Realtors, but there are, I think, safe to say, plenty of very good real estate agents who haven't done that for whatever reason. That might be something you can even ask them about. So they don't necessarily have to. In California, the legal, the bar they need to get over is they need to have their license. So nobody who is technically a realtor can do anything that somebody who is a real estate agent can't do. This is just they've chosen to join a professional organization, which gives them that ability to use that term realtors and to stand up to some of the standards that Mike mentioned that they hold themselves to, which California law doesn't have. So it's hard to legislate some of those things. Chica, did I explain that correctly?
Yes. From a regulatory perspective, yes. And I would liken it to the DMV. As the Department of Real Estate, we issue a license. And, you know, for an entry-level person coming into the industry, what are the basic requirements that you need to meet to go into the real estate industry as a salesperson or as a broker? And then what are the basic things you need to do in order to keep that license? Same thing with the DMV. There are basic things you need to do to get your driver's license, and then there are basic things you need to do in order to maintain it and not have it taken away by the DMV. And then there are things that you can do to enhance your driving skills or to enhance your professionalism as a real estate licensee, which may include joining a trade organization or getting additional certificates. So there are things that you can look for in a real estate agent that may enhance your experience as a home buyer because of your real estate agent's experience or certificates or other achievements they might have.
Now, Mike, before we start talking about the specifics of how to find a real estate agent, let's talk money. Specifically, how the buyer's agent gets paid. You hear a lot about agents being paid by commission. You even hear a lot about the buyer's agent being paid by the seller. So we'll start off with a couple of questions. First, what's the truth about how a buyer's agent is compensated? And if it's by commission, how does that work? And is it negotiable?
You know, it's funny, when I teach my classes a lot, this comes up. And I teach both, of course, for UC San Diego, I teach to professional organizations. And it surprises me how a lot of people don't understand how commission really is paid. So the way we do commission, at least I'll speak for here in California, okay, is when I do a listing agreement with, like, say, you know, you, Rick, you're my seller. We sit down and we discuss how commission's going to be paid out because as a realtor, I should be paid. I'm doing a service, right? Well, in that we discuss those amounts for now. I think I should back up and say, as a realtor, what is the function I'm doing as a listing agent? I have to talk about the listing agent to then get to the buyer's agent. So this might take a second. So as a listing agent, am I selling your home? No, what am I actually doing? Yeah, for marketing it, right? And that's why I always love when people are saying like, oh, I'm going to sell this home right now. It's like, well, you're going to market the home and hopefully find the buyer and then help the contract and be equitable and all that. At least that's how my interpretation's always been. So let's focus on that for a second. I'm going to market and find the buyer. Now, it's also important to know that if a seller could walk outside and find a buyer, they're going to do that without the agent sometimes. Why? Because they're probably going to want to save paying commission. But ultimately, there is a value in using a real estate professional, which is they're going to understand how to market the home, what to look for, how to advise. So in this case, they're going to find a real estate professional. In our case, we'll say a realtor, right? Or a real estate agent. And they're going to sign the listing agreement saying, I will pay you X amount of commission. So let's say in this example, let's say 6%. Okay. So Rick agrees that he's going to pay me as a listing agent 6% of the sales price of the home in order to find a buyer and sell it. But if I find the property that or the buyer, I'm dual agent, which we'll come back to, right? I know that that's something we're going to probably talk about. But if that's the case, I keep my full commission. Now, if not, what am I also going to do? I'm going to advertise the home. If I advertise the property, I am now saying to other agents, if you come and bring me a buyer, I'm going to share part of my commission with you, the commission that I've agreed to. So that is how the buyer's agent gets paid. They get paid from the listing agent. This does two things, which is kind of cool. Okay. One, if I'm a buyer's agent, okay, and I'm having an issue on not being paid commission, am I suing the seller? I'm suing the listing agent. Okay. I'm suing his broker. And the other cool thing about that is it keeps me, at least that's how I was interpreted it. It keeps, or not me, but the buyer's agent from coming to me as the listing agent saying, hey, Mike, I'll buy Rick's house, but only if you give me like 4%. We've already outlined an established commission, which is a share of commission. Now that's my interpretation. There's other changes that have happened to this, but the commission is paid by the listing agent's broker, which has originally been agreed to by the seller based on their listing agreement. And that's why I had to back up and explain that. So that's how a buyer's agent is compensated, and they're compensated for bringing a buyer that is willing to purchase the property.
I think what it comes down to for a home buyer is just understanding that your agents are getting compensated, and to ask the questions, who's getting compensated? How are they getting compensated? Because, you know, different areas might have a different philosophy or culture or way of doing things. Most of California does things the way Mike described, but you may have a particular area where the buyer gets paid directly by the buyer's agent and the seller gets paid directly by the seller's agent. So there may be some differences, but from a regulator's perspective, what we expect is that there is a discussion about compensation, that it's adequately disclosed to the clients, and that the clients understand that the commission is negotiable.
I'm surprised that it's like the most difficult thing. It seems to be like a lot of times people just don't want to talk about money. Well, this is, you're dealing with money. Talk about it.
Right. All right. Let's go ahead and start zeroing in now on how to find an agent. The first step is to make sure your agent is properly licensed by the California Department of Real Estate or DRE. Chica, you get a three-part question here. First, what are the different types of licenses the DRE issues? Second, what education experience does somebody need to get a license? And third, what else do they have to do before they can get a real estate license?
Well, DRE offers and issues a lot of different kinds of licenses, but the two primary licenses that we issue are the broker's license and the salesperson's license. And if I can put it in the most simple terms, the broker's license is issued to the broker who wants to be the boss, and the salesperson's work under the broker. If for a salesperson license, that person applying doesn't need any prior experience, but it's different for a broker. A broker is going to have worked as a licensed salesperson for the equivalent of 2 years full time. They can also use a four-year degree with a major or minor in real estate as a substitute for the experience requirement, or they can try to apply using some sort of equivalent experience as a substitute. Maybe they've worked in the escrow industry or title industry or in the banking industry. And if someone wants to try to use equivalent experience as a substitute, then DRE is going to look at those on an application by application basis. And then to get those licenses, you're also going to need the education. A salesperson is going to have 3 courses, college level courses. Go see Mike. And a broker is going to have 8 college level courses. And then, of course, they're going to have to take and pass a written exam. The broker's exam is going to be more extensive, covering a lot more topics. And that's why it's important to understand that the broker's the boss, because they have to have more experience. They have to go through more college courses, and they have to take an exam that covers more topics. The business, the brokerage, it is all done under that broker's license. A salesperson cannot work on their own. They can only do real estate activities if their license is connected to a broker and they're supposed to be supervised by a broker.
So there are some standards that are there that everybody who gets a license. So going into the process, if you know that you're hiring somebody who is a licensed real estate agent, you know that they've already, you know, showed they've had some education, they've passed the exam. I believe they undergo a criminal background check and fingerprinting and things as well. So there's steps, and certainly it's a good bar to get over just to get into this industry. Okay, Mike, let's say a homeowner now doesn't know anybody who works in the real estate industry, and they've got absolutely no idea where to start their search for an agent. What advice do you have for them?
I really don't know how to answer that, because I never thought in my life I'd hear that someone didn't know a realtor or a real estate agent somewhere around anywhere. You just throw a rock and you hit someone. Isn't that right? I mean, there's a lot. We have several hundred thousand here, but no, this is very true. Now, I want to take it one step further though. You know, an agent that maybe they're comfortable working with, I think that would be a good one. Because I mean, let's be real. A lot of people have licenses, you know, but the reality is, where are you going to find someone? And I always say, you know, we get this question a lot, you know, how do you know if someone's qualified? Well, you know, I mean, you can look them up. You can, you know, look up their record online. I say, I'm always the one that believes in referrals, in looking to see, you know, from friends, family, you know, everybody knows someone who maybe has bought a house, or even maybe if someone helped you rent a property, ask them if they hold a license, if you felt comfortable with them. Because what it is if someone is a licensee, that's one thing. But then you also have to feel comfortable with them. You have to feel like you can start to establish trust. Not that they, you trust them, you trust is earned over time, right? But you have to start to feel right with someone helping you with the largest investment of your life. And that's the beauty of social media. You know, you can start to say like, hey, does anyone have a realtor they've worked with? Does anyone have someone who can help me purchase a home? You know, you can go on and in your online searches, just make sure, I think the biggest thing is get a few of them. You know, don't be afraid to interview a real estate agent. Look up their record. You know, she can tell you, you can look right on dre.ca.gov and you can do an agent public license lookup and see if they have a restricted license, see if they have some issues that may have happened in the past that are on record there. You can check their online reviews with Zillow, with Redfin, with all these online sites that say people's accounts of how the real estate agent worked. But, you know, generally, I think your best bet is to ask people that you know, people that you trust, and see what that experience was like. And don't be afraid to interview a few of them at a time and say, hey, I'd like to see if this progresses and how it's going to work out.
Mike, I remember when we did our episodes about mortgages and talking about brokers and finding the people to work with for the financing. And I recall that you talked about the fact that you really have to trust this. Don't be afraid to tell them, make sure they understand your situation. Would that extend to what you would want to, you know, when you're working with a real estate agent, you want to be open with them about your situation, what you're looking for. That will do nothing but to help the relationship, I would assume.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's funny. Before we did the show today, I had a lunch with a student, and they have this cool thing at the university where you can do lunch with a professor, and the college they're in actually pays for you to have lunch with them. And it was cool because he wants to be in real estate, and we're going over things. And I've told him how I've gone to, like, even recently, I was at it was a baptismal party for a client of mine where I helped them years ago get the house that their kid's now going to be raised in. You know, you become part of someone's family in some cases, you know, because they trust you, and you have to build trust. It's earned. And I always believe that, you know, in this profession, it's how it should be. You got to follow your gut though, you know, and sometimes your gut guides you the right way. Sometimes it doesn't. But I think the example I used in our mortgage episode was had to do with me trying to find a babysitter for my daughter. And I remember I called my mom and I had said, hey mom, this babysitter is perfect on paper, but I got a gut feeling to tell me something's wrong. And she goes, don't go with it. Don't care what anyone says, just do it. And that was my mom. In her European voice, it was like still rings in my head. I think the same thing should be done with a mortgage, with a realtor, with people who handle any financial aspect. I mean, this is people's lives. This is your future. This is the biggest investment you'll make. Trust the person. And if you don't get a good vibe from them, trust that. Go somewhere else. You know, I think, I don't know, Chica, how do you find a real estate agent when, because you're on government leave right now, correct?
I am on government service, so I cannot use my license. If I were to look for somebody, I would do exactly what you've described. If I may add to that, when you talked about interviewing your agent, I think asking a lot of questions and then listening to how that person responds to you is going to be very important and very telling as to how they're going to respond to you when you're actually going through the transaction. Because if they're patient with you before you're even their client, then hopefully they'll be patient with you when you're going through the transaction and explain to you and guide you through the process. I also feel like if you don't know what questions to ask, you should ask that person, what questions should I be asking? And then they can explain to you the process. They can let you know what it's like to work with first-time home buyers and what the experience looks like. But if they can't even offer you those kinds of questions, maybe they're not the right person for you. And I also think that you need to have a real estate agent that works with you that's going to be straightforward with you and help you manage expectations. Because if you're walking in and saying, I want a 5-bedroom home with 5 bathrooms for $100,000 on acreage, and that real estate agent tells you, of course, I will help you find that, then maybe they lack the experience and knowledge, because you're not going to find that in California, really, unless it's a broken down property that you're not going to want as a first-time home buyer. So if they're having those conversations with you up front, then it's probably a good sign. But if not, then it might be a bad sign.
I love that you said that. You know why? One of the things I always say to people, I go, real estate agents don't always get paid to tell you what you want to hear. They get paid to tell you what you don't want to hear, but you need to know. And that sometimes it, you know, sometimes they don't like it, but especially with, I mean, I keep forgetting this is for first time home buyers. And it really is. You got to have someone who's ready to hold your hand, you know, and let you learn the process, because that's ultimately what's going to empower you and make you feel more comfortable about what you're doing. So don't be afraid to ask those questions. Don't be afraid. And I like that. Ask them, what should I be asking you? And see if you feel good about it.
Great. Now, one of the other terms you always hear in real estate, it's all about location, location, location. With that in mind, Mike, how important is it to hire a real estate agent who's sold homes in the area that you want to buy? And what can you do to verify that they actually have the experience they say they have?
I think that's probably the most important thing to do. I mean, I just came back from being in Las Vegas, right? I was at a music festival. I'm not selling property in Las Vegas. I wouldn't know where to start. I wouldn't know how to explain it. I don't know anything about the schools. I don't know anything about where the Starbucks is. I don't know any of this stuff. You know, I mean, now, you know, obviously I'm located in Southern California. I know my region, you know, but you get to some parts of other parts of California. It's really important that someone understands the community. They understand, you know, there's a concept in real estate known as linkages, which is like, you know, I have my home, then I have my businesses that are around, my grocery stores. You know, you have to be able to service a need. Now, they should know the location. Now, if you have a realtor that you trust, and I notice I put that term in there, but they don't service the area you want to be in, ask them if they know a real estate agent that they would trust in that area. And that's how I would approach that. And also then do your homework. Check. Again, the media we have now, the all the tools that we have at our disposal, didn't have when I was a kid, you know? And so now it's, you can go online and see someone's reviews. You can see their record. You can see all the fail safes that we've talked about before. It's the exact same thing here. And you can see where they've been purchasing property. You can see any licensed agent who has sold. You can see online, based on how the reporting comes over, you can see the area that they've worked in and see if they've worked in your area.
How about advertising? Some agents you see do a lot of advertising. Some rely on referrals and other things, don't do a lot. Because they advertise, does that make them a better agent?
You know, when you look at advertising, I'll be honest, sometimes I think this stuff is cheesy. You know, I always compare it to, I compare real estate in some fashions to like when you meet someone out of social gathering. And I usually get students laughing when I bring up, you know, imagine like, say, Chica, if you see, like, say you're, and I don't know if Chica's married or anything, I'm not trying to go there. I'm just saying, like, as an example, if you're, say, out in a social gathering or in a bar or something, and a guy comes up to you and, you know, say you guys are having a great conversation, everything's great, he's dressed to the nines, and you start to look down, you notice his shoes are very muddy. What does that tell you? I usually get a good reaction on that, a laugh, because it says certain things about the person, you know, that they're maybe hiding something or they're not well kept. And I use that as an example when I teach contracts. We want to make sure attention to detail is there. You know, I do think there's some credence to if a real estate agent can act the part, but I'm not going to lie, I do feel part of the problem in our industry is there's too much attention on the realtor's image as opposed to their actual abilities. So I think if they've been able to keep themselves very professional, that's one part of the whole equation. But I really put more credence and validity into how my impression is of them when I actually meet them. How I speak to someone, real estate is an interactive sport. How I speak to someone is how I'm going to negotiate and work for them. So I'm always big on, you know, when you talk to a real estate agent, how are they negotiating with you? Because you want to sign a contract with them. As a buyer, you generally want to sign a buyer representation agreement. As a listing agent with a seller, you want to sign a listing agreement. And in that, how they negotiate the terms of that is how they're going to negotiate on your behalf. Those are the things I think people should pick up on. I think we've actually personally gotten a little too focused on the lifestyle of the real estate agent and not as focused on what their actual abilities are. Can that help if they know how to advertise themselves? Absolutely. But I would use that as one part of the total equation. That's my personal opinion. But now Chica's got to jump in on this one.
Well, I'm not going to any bars anytime soon. I do understand wanting to brand, and I do understand wanting to get your face out there. It is important being in the industry. It was important that I get my face out there, my name out there, support the brand that I was working for. But to Mike's point, you're still working with a person, a human being, and that interaction, that communication is very important. So I'm not sure if more advertising means a better agent, personally, but I really think that the person-to-person interaction is most important.
All right, Chica, while there's still a lot of small real estate offices around, we're seeing a lot of consolidation in the industry. What that means, there's more and more big agencies with lots of salespersons. How can the size of a real estate company affect the first-time homebuyer?
Sure. There are pros and cons to both. So I really think it's going to be up to the homebuyer to figure out what's their best fit, to what Mike was saying about interviewing them. With a bigger company, you're going to get a lot of support in the background that you're not going to see. For example, they're probably going to have transaction coordinators who are going to be doing a lot of the clerical work, helping with organization and scheduling and those kinds of clerical tasks. And they'll have levels of supervisors and managers providing advice and support to the real estate agents. They'll have compliance people on staff. They'll have attorneys on staff that can provide legal advice. And they'll have, you know, depending on their size, connections within the entire state of California or connections nationwide if you're wanting to find properties or homes outside of the state. But on the other hand, you might have challenges with a larger company in getting to talk to that top person, that boss, the real estate broker. That's the person that owns the transaction and is overall responsible for it and for your salesperson's activities. And you may also end up dealing with a lot of different people within that brokerage. And it can get confusing when you've got five different people contacting you about your transaction. And to what Mike was saying, if your salesperson's not local to where you're buying, then they might not have the expertise that, you know, Mike was talking about. And with a smaller company, you know, they might not have all that support on staff in the background, and you might only be dealing with a salesperson and their broker, maybe a clerical person, but that means you have less levels of management to get through if you have an issue. And most likely they're going to know all of the ins and outs of what's happening in your transaction because they're hands-on the whole time. And if you're looking to buy outside of that brokerage or outside of their local area or expertise, their reach is probably going to be to other brokerages within their sphere of influence or within their referral business and not within their own company. So I think it's just up to the home buyer to do those interviews, to talk to a lot of different people to find out what's on their comfort level.
Great. Okay, Mike, earlier we talked about asking the real estate agent, you know, what questions should I be asking you? We're going to make a twist on that for you now. What's the one question that you wish that more prospective clients would ask you?
You know, it's funny because I said that I wish the emphasis was less on the realtors and more on their abilities. But with this question, I wish, because I've been interviewed, you know, and I've told a lot of people to go do this and talk to them. I wish you would ask me why I do what I do. Understand the why of the person who's going to be working with you and see if they give you the cheesy answer, if they're, you know, or if they give you something that seems like it's who they are. You're trying to understand who they are. You can do background on how many deals someone's closed. You know, you can get a gut reaction, but I like to throw people off and kind of understand who they are. Remember, you're going to be spending a lot of time with these people. You know, you're going to be working pretty hand in hand with them and talking to them late at night, talking to them early in the morning, you know, being frustrated with them, being happy with them. Understand why they do what they do. Because they're going to tell you, this is a second gig for me. This is, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But I mean, that could be something that you're like, well, hey, I want someone who's doing this more full time. It could be, you know, that you're doing it for a variety of reasons. And it could just say they're like, I love it. It makes me great money. Hey, they're being honest. You know, that means also money's a factor for a lot of people. That's their income. They're going to work really hard to get this deal closed in the most efficient use of time too. So I just wish people asked me more why I did it and try to get to know me a little better sometimes, because we're going to get to know each other over time as it is. But in the beginning, I think it's a good question to ask, just personally.
Folks are going to have at least one question for their interview thing. Everybody's going to ask their prospective agents why you're doing this.
Mm-hmm. I think they should. I think the agents will be really surprised. So
Right. Okay. There's a decent chance that the real estate agent you hire to work for you may end up working for the same broker as the agent hired by the home seller. That situation is called dual agency. So we want to spend a little time talking about that. Chica, let's start with what the law says about dual agencies. What are the rules here in California?
Well, I'm going to start by confusing everybody more with the terminology, because I know we've been using the word agent, real estate agent, throughout this conversation, but the true agent of you as a home buyer is the broker. And so I just want to make that very clear, because it's the broker's transaction. It's the broker who's responsible. It's the broker that by law owes you the fiduciary duties. Now, the salesperson working under that broker is an agent. They are an agent of the broker. And so through acting as an agent of the broker, they also owe you the fiduciary duties that the broker owes you by law. So the reason that I want to bring that up is because when you're buying a home and you are working with an individual, so I'm buying a home and I'm working with Mike. Sorry, Mike, I don't know if you're a salesperson or a broker.
Broker.
Okay, I won't use you then. I go to Joe Smith down the street.
Make me a salesperson. You can demote me right now.
No, I don't want to do that.
I appreciate that. But you know, I give up temporarily my broker status. I'm a salesperson because I really want to work with Chica.
Okay. Well, then thank you. I'll use Mike then. I'll pretend Mike is a salesperson. I will temporarily demote you. So I've been working with Mike for some time looking for a home. And Mike is a salesperson working for ABC Brokerage. If Mike shows me a home that's listed under you, Rick, you are the person that signed the listing agreement with the seller, and you, Rick, also work for ABC Brokerage, then we are now entering into potentially a dual agency transaction. So even though you, Mike, and you, Rick, are salespersons, you have been the ones helping me and helping the seller. Since you both work under the same broker, well, this is a dual agency transaction. So a lot of consumers think that because the human being that they're working with is different from the human being working with the seller, that it's not dual agency, but that's not true. It's the broker that is the agent. It's the broker that is the broker that holds the listing and then is also representing the buyer that could end up in a dual agency situation. So that's the essential bottom line. I hope I didn't confuse anybody too much of that. Yes, Mike raised, you can't see it, but Mike raised his
hand. I'm raising my hand, right? Well, no, I want to come in. I think Chica explained that beautifully, but I'm going to throw a little wrench in there myself, because as I mentioned now, okay, I'm going to take my broker status back now. I do hold a broker's license, right? But to be fair, and I want to make sure I clear this up for our listeners too. Someone can have a broker's license and work under a broker. So that is a similar situation where I'm acting, basically I'm as a salesperson, correct, Chica? So I'm a broker associate.
That's absolutely right.
So be careful with the terms. If someone says to you, they're a broker, they could work under another broker. And that's where it gets a little complicated. It's a licensing status thing too. But so when you're talking to your, I just wanted to point that out, because I could see some of our listeners maybe, you know, saying, oh, you're a broker, and they don't realize that that could still be the case. So I forgot about that. I was like, wait, I'm a broker associate, you know, but yeah, it's, I love that, because it's, you know, a lot of people, I think, and I see that too, they don't realize that everything's dual agency if it's under the same broker.
Thank you very much, Mike, for clarifying that. It is important to make that distinction that you could be a broker working for another broker. So I appreciate you reminding me of that fact.
Us all adequately confusing the listeners even more.
Not intending to.
You'll need a scorecard to follow along with this. Let's take a step back and to make sure, because we want to go through some situations and try to find out, you know, practically how that real estate agent should deal with these situations. So what you're saying is, if they both work for the same broker, it doesn't matter, because you're seeing some of these mega agencies now that are throughout the state. So it doesn't matter if it's the ABC real estate company and I'm here in Sacramento and I'm doing this, but the seller happens to be in Stockton or, you know, an hour away, a decent size away, but works technically for the same agency, That's a dual agency.
That's right.
Now, why, as a first-time home buyer, should this matter to me? Or what's the potential conflict if both the buyer, my agent, and the seller's agent both work for the same broker? Why is that an issue?
As an agent, that person owes you fiduciary duties. And that's a legal term, and there are a lot of ways to describe it. The easiest way to describe it is that that person has to act in your best interest, even considering their own interests in the transaction. So if you are in a dual agency situation, your agent is the broker, and the broker is representing both the seller and you as the home buyer at the same time. Then you wonder, well, how are they going to be representing both of our interests when the seller is going to be wanting to sell the property at the highest price and the buyer is wanting to buy the property at the lowest price? So it can become a difficult transaction to navigate, but at the same time, it can work out. I mean, obviously, the broker and their salespersons or broker associates, to Mike's point, they're not allowed to tell you how much the seller is really willing to accept, what's their lowest price. And the buyer's not, they're not going to share information about the buyer and what the highest price is that they're willing to accept. So they're going to all have to walk through this transaction very carefully. But as a home buyer, you need to understand that that one brokerage is representing both you and the seller and having to navigate that difficulty of trying to maintain their fiduciary duties to both of you.
Now, is that something if you don't notice as the buyer that there is that dual agency situation, are they required to tell you? Is there a form they have to give you to state that so you know that? How does a buyer, an unsuspecting buyer, know, Chica?
They are supposed to let you know. First and foremost, there are disclosures, written disclosures that are required by law. And as a client to that transaction, you have to agree to that. So if you don't agree to that, then that's a conversation you need to have with your agent. And maybe that's not the right property for you, or maybe you need to find another person to represent you in that transaction. But that is something that the agent and their salespersons are required to disclose to you as a client to the transaction. And they also have to disclose it to the seller so that the seller understands and can make a good decision about what they want to do with that property in the listing.
Mike, let me ask you a very practical question for an example. What happens if you hire your buyer's agent, you're out looking for a house, and you find one you really like, and your buying agent is actually the listings or seller's agent already? How would you, from practical terms, deal with that? We're talking on the ultimate dual agency when literally it's the same agent who represents both sides.
First and foremost, I think that should be disclosed when you look at the property, like right away. You know, this is a property that I have as a listing. And, you know, just to make it be very clear, I do know the seller on this one. I am representing them for it. You know, I'll be honest, but my perspective, I understand. And of course, we're going to talk about dual agency with at this point, but I'm going to say this part. I think dual agency is something that, you know, to be blunt, it's outlawed in some states, California, it's legal. And I think it really is the ultimate test of trust and ability and ethics, because, you know, there is no like perfect answer, but it's making sure first and foremost that it's disclosed, which it is disclosed if you place an offer. And you use certain forms, there's a disclosure called the PRBS, which is the possible representation of more than one buyer or seller disclosure and consent. It's also in the agency agreement where it says we could have dual representation here. And I, you know, when I was a broker for a company, specifically as broker of record, so the one that Chica was talking about where I had agents under me. And, you know, I was asked at first, when I came in, and I think this will help answer this question, by the person who owned the company, do you trust, because they were from out of state, and they said, do you trust your agents to do dual agency? And I said, well, the way I look at it, if I don't trust my agents to do dual agency, I don't trust them to be a single agency, because I feel like they should follow their code and their ethics. But how do they navigate that? You know, and ultimately, I think that the biggest thing is, the way I look at it is, who's most likely to, who's taking the longer risk, a buyer is. So the way I used to explain it to my listings is, or to my sellers, I go, we may represent a buyer. And if I do represent the buyer, I'm going to tell you right now, it's probably going to look like I'm paying more attention to the buyer. And it's not that I am, but by making sure that we adequately answer every single one of the buyer's concerns, disclose every bit of information that we can, make sure everything's in writing from back and forth. We're protecting you ultimately to make sure that everything's done correctly and there's no risk of there being a later suit or something missed or not disclosed or the appearance of impropriety. You know, with that being said, it's difficult.
When you're ready to make an offer, are you bringing in, you're not handling both sides at that point? Are you bringing another agent in to handle one of the sides if they decide they want to make an offer to the buyer?
Well, I think there's an important distinction here because, you know, as you mentioned, dual agency, and this was clarified through some court cases a few years ago, dual agency can occur in one of two fashions. Okay. One, we have the one that most people think right off the top, which is I'm an agent, I'm representing Chica, right, who is my buyer, and I happen to also represent the seller, which in this case we'll say is you, Rick. That is the dual agency everybody thinks of. The other part that we see is dual agency, which was more clarified a few years ago, which is the example that also Chica had brought up, which is I work for a brokerage. Frank works for the same brokerage. Frank represents the seller. I represent Chica as the buyer. We happen to see the property and guess what? Made the offer and it was accepted. Here's the thing. Practically, I might not know who the heck Frank is, but because we have the same broker, that broker is the one that technically represents both. So there's still a standard of care that has to be taken. Now, in that situation of maybe I represent, you know, like I told you, I represent Chica. I also represent you as the seller, Rick. You know, I've done it both ways. I have brought in another agent and said, hey, we'll work out the commission. Will you represent the buyer in this? Because I don't even want there to be anything even close to there being an appearance. And there's been some situations where I've said, look, I'm comfortable taking both of these. I think I can navigate this without any problem. The way I've normally addressed it in the fashion where I brought another agent in is I've talked to both sides. And if there was any hesitation in their voices, any type of appearance that they were uncomfortable, I said, would you feel better if I brought another agent in? But I think it's important to mention that's still dual agency, but they've disclosed they feel better because it's not the same person necessarily directly dealing with them.
Yeah. So in this case, the advice to the first-time home buyer would be, it's something that if you find about this, you definitely should talk to your, in this case, buyer's agent about and determine if how it's going to be sorted out, if they are going to bring another agent in. And just, you know, obviously it's all particular to that situation, but it's okay for the home buyer to ask the questions and to try to get this all figured out if you happen to be the same person who was also the listing agent.
Yeah. And I think this can be a slippery slope on some things, because obviously we look at how we're supposed to do it. And then there's, you know, I'll say it. I mean, there's, you know, people get so scared to say something because what do they want? They want to buy the house, but they should also realize that no house is worth their feeling uncomfortable. Nothing ever is worth not feeling like you don't have a voice. And any agent, like we brought up, how do you know if you should be working with that agent? Agents need to know that they need clients more than the clients need the agents. Okay. And that's not saying that they don't need them. It's saying, understand that mindset. You're the client to us. You should tell us, I don't feel comfortable. And an agent that understands that will not try to sell you on the idea. They will try to say, what can I do to make you comfortable? What can I do to make you feel better about this? Because ultimately the goal is what? Find the house. So I think that's, you should, buyers and sellers alike should all know that they have a voice and they should feel comfortable using that voice. I think things are going to fall into place a lot easier when we get that understanding down.
Well, hopefully these tips will help you in your quest to buy your first home, but no matter how much you prepare, sometimes things can still go south. Chica, can you give us a sense of some of the problems that you've seen that can lead a home buyer to file a complaint with DRE?
We see a variety of different complaints, but if I were to summarize them within a few key ones, one of them would be that's not what they said, that's not what they told me situation. For example, a consumer might say, well, my real estate agent told me that it would be ABC, but when the whole transaction closed, it turned out to be XYZ. It could have been that the price was different, or the closing date was different than they thought, or they thought that wonderful stainless steel refrigerator with all the bells and whistles was going to stay when it actually left the property. So we get those kinds of complaints. And when we look at the documents, we see that it wasn't ABC like they were told, it was XYZ. And those documents were signed by the people complaining. So really, when we have a situation where someone says, well, that's what they told me, but the documents that are signed by the person say otherwise, we really don't have a lot to move forward with. So if I can add a tip along with the complaint issue that we see, it's to read everything, read what you're signing. I know it can be daunting to have a few thousand pages of documents to scroll through or read through, but you're making a huge financial decision to what Mike was saying, and you really shouldn't just blindly sign anything or click through documents.
Yeah, I think that goes back to what you're saying about how comfortable you are with that agent, how much they're willing to hold your hand through this situation. When it comes to all the disclosures, you definitely you want to be on the same page as far as how much they're going to explain and walk you through what you really need to know.
That's exactly right. And that's another type of complaint that we get is having to do with disclosures, because when you're buying a property, the seller, and with limited exemptions, is supposed to provide you with a lot of disclosures of what's wrong with the house or what's right with the house, and items that will help you decide whether or not you want to buy that property. And your real estate agent is supposed to help explain that information and explain the practical application of what is being disclosed to you. And then also recommend different inspections by qualified professionals. For example, you might not need a lot of inspections if you're buying a two-year-old tract home in a subdivision, but you might need different kinds of inspections if you're buying a 200-year-old historic property that's a log cabin built on the side of a mountain on 200 acres of property. So your agent, you're back to what Mike was saying about trust, you're going to have to trust that agent to know what inspections to get. But if you say, I don't need any inspections, and then you find something out later that was disclosed to you, or you could have found out through inspections, and then you come complain to us, we have a difficult time saying that the agent knew about it, or that you should have known about it when maybe it was disclosed to you and you didn't read it, or maybe it could have been found based on a little more digging. But I think one of the more common complaints that we get is that a consumer is in the middle of a transaction and they can't get a call back from their agent. And that speaks, unfortunately, to the level of professionalism of that person. But maybe there's some sort of emergency that's taken them away. And it's very simply a failure to communicate. But what I would ask a consumer to do is to just call us. If you're in the middle of a transaction and you're not sure what's happening is correct, or if you're done with the transaction and you found something out that's not quite correct in your mind, then please give us a call, and it's to something we can discuss. If we can't handle it, if it's something that's not within our jurisdiction, we'll let you know and we'll refer you to a resource. But if it is something we want to know about, then I would ask you to file a complaint, or our representative will ask you to file a complaint and let us take a look at it. Thank you, Mike, for promoting our website a few times earlier, but our website is dre.ca.gov. And that's the fastest way to file a complaint with us.
Okay, so now we've gone through all of this and we've made our decision. We've figured out the agent that we want to hire. Mike, what are the rules for how long that you have to commit to an agent? And what happens if something starts going wrong and you want to, in essence, fire that agent? Are there any rules for that, or how do you see that working?
It depends. If you have a written agreement with your buyer's agent, which you should have, it's called... One of the forms that is commonly used is called a buyer representation and broker compensation agreement, known as a BRBC. And that is a written agreement that outlines, among other things, how your agent gets paid, what the responsibilities are, the term of the agreement, and whether or not that agreement is an exclusive or a non-exclusive agreement. So having something in writing benefits you. You should have it regardless of whether or not it's, if you want to keep the agent or scared you're going to get rid of them, because you can put in the agreement whether or not you can just stop working with them. I mean, essentially you can ghost your agent. I mean, if you're looking and you haven't found a property. Now, if you end up in escrow, you do have, meaning your offer has been accepted. You are in a transaction at that point, and that agent is representing you. But remember what Chica said before.
you are working with the agent, but you are actually the client of the broker. So if there is a problem with the agent, you can always contact the broker. So, I mean, the biggest thing, though, is to also remember, if there is a problem with an agent, I don't recommend people just bail on them. Try talking to them about it, because they're working too. So a lot of things can be worked out through conversation. And I think that's a really important factor to it. And I want to dovetail on what Chica said before. Please read your paperwork. Please, please, please read your paperwork. Don't ask your agent to read the paperwork. You read the paperwork and then ask them questions based on what you read. Because that I see that all the time. I had that a while back. Someone was just like, hey, you read it. And we finally got to a point. I'm like, I'm not going to do that. This is your house, your responsibility, your mortgage payments. You go through that. And remember, real estate's an interactive sport.
Is there a typical length of time that the agreement is going to last between you and your agent?
And that's a great question, because everything's negotiable. That if there's no written agreement, guess what? Then there's no timeline. If I have a written agreement, you always put, and they changed it being how they do these standardized forms that we have, where now it's by days. I can make an agreement that lasts for 7 days, 1 day, 360 days. You outline the terms of the agreement. So that's something you negotiate with your agent when you decide you're going to work together. And honestly, I don't think this should be on the agent all the time to say, let's get a written agreement between us from buyer to buyer's agent. I think that should be something that the client should be saying. Is there a written agreement that we can sign that outlines everything together? That's the purpose of that, for both sides. And in that, it would say like, hey, if I haven't found a property in this time, I'm going to go find another agent. Then you guys understand the parameters of your relationship. And I think that's a great thing. But to answer your question, there isn't necessarily a standard, because, right now, supply is limited. It could take someone 3-4 months to find a property. It might take them less, but so at what point do you say, hey, this is, I'm good with this. I'm not going to continue working with you, and that's why you should really come down to having some form of written agreement between you and your buyer's agent.
Before we wrap up, Chica, I wanted to get some more of your unique perspective, because you've worked both in the industry and now as a regulator. So what is your advice for the first time home buyer? What should they consider? Their bottom line, what should they consider when they're looking to hire a buyer's real estate agent?
Well, if I may add, I'm also a consumer, so I have that perspective too. But I think a lot of the advice has already been said. As a regulator, I'll mostly put that hat on right now. The number one is to make sure you're working with somebody that's properly licensed. I know we've said it, but I can't emphasize it enough, because I'm embarrassed to say I have not done that in the past. I haven't looked up my doctor, and my doctor knows a lot about me from a physical and health perspective, knows a lot of private information about me. And the same goes with your real estate agent. They're going to get to know you, a lot of personal things, a lot of confidential things. And as Mike pointed out, they're helping you make one of the biggest financial decisions of your life. And you want to make sure that they have the right experience and education, and then the right license to have that kind of role in your life. And then from a consumer protection perspective, when you work with a licensed person, there are a lot of protections that you have. They have to follow the real estate law, or they risk losing their license and they risk their business being impacted. Another point is that while real estate agents are not required to have insurance to have a license, a lot do, just as a matter of business. And so if something goes wrong in your transaction, they might have insurance coverage to help cover issues that happened in the transaction. And then if a consumer gets harmed by a real estate licensee, we have a consumer recovery account that a harmed consumer can turn to as a fund of last resort. And you don't get any of those protections with an unlicensed person. And instead, you end up bearing all of the risk and potential liability.
Terrific advice. Mike, any thoughts from you from the agent's perspective and what you look for when you're taking on a new client?
Focus it on the relationship that you have, and trust your gut. That's probably going to bite me for saying it, but I'm going to say trust your gut. From an agent's perspective, just don't be afraid to tell someone when you're not feeling comfortable with them. Don't waste the agent's time. This is a person who is working too, So from an agent's perspective, I will say, please always just be upfront. you know, and just say where you want to be, what you want to do. Realize you're going to be reading a lot of stuff and understand what's going on, but really take the time, you know, be part of that to understand that these are human beings. Remember, most real estate agents are, if not a strong majority, large majority, are all self-employed. They're all trying to do what they can to get through things. And the reality of it is that they're, you know, if you don't buy a house, they don't get paid. So at least be honest with them, you know, say, hey, I don't really keep doing this. At least then if people cut their losses. But don't be afraid to ask questions, and please ask questions. You know, I'll tell you right now, most agents are comfortable with you asking questions. They are, because it means the more you ask, just make sure you document everything, put it all in writing. They're not going to freak out that way. The more, Chiki could probably attest to this, the more we have everything in writing, the less questions we're going to have later, because if someone says there's a problem, they got to prove it. Like she said earlier, you know, so it's, I'm a big believer in that, but just make sure that you're, make sure you're being honest with everybody. We have to act in good faith all across the board.
Great. Great advice from both of you. Thank you, Mike Schenkman, Chika Sundquist. Thank you both for joining us today and for your expertise. We are going to put a lot of links in our show notes, especially for looking up a real estate agent's license, finding out more information. That is going to do it for this episode of First Home California. Thanks for listening. Be sure to click the follow button on your podcast app so you will never miss an episode. We'd also appreciate it if you tell a friend about the podcast. Even if they're not a first-time home buyer, we have got a lot of information here that will help them navigate the home buying process. We also invite you to check out the First Home California page on our Department of Real Estate website. That address is dre.ca.gov/First Home California. I'm Rick Lopes, and you've been listening to First Home California, a production of the California Department of Real Estate.